Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
Party on, Rob.
Party on, Jason. Okay.
All right.
Oh, that's good. How's it going?
It's going. I'm going to give this a it's going.
You're today. Riding the pony, man. Riding the pony.
Right? Pony, pony.
What's new?
What is new? You know, I've been working on a lot of designs lately.
That's been
taking up way more time than it probably should.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to...
Fair enough.
Trying to get some more stuff to proto to really, you know...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel you.
It's tough to know which ones to do that with.
Yeah, I struggle with that a lot. You and I have been talking about my struggles with that lately, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, I've got two ideas here. Well, the tower game that I pitched 2 weeks ago... And then another one that I'm going to be probably pitching, not tonight, but in the near future, kind of going back and forth with these two ideas that I really like a lot and trying to figure out which ones are worth my time. Obviously, the tower game I've already prototyped. I'm going to prototype the next one as well. But after that, I have to decide, you know, what am I going to go for? What am I going to put the energy into? So, yeah, it's tough.
Right. No, I mean, it is. And I think building the prototypes can really kind of change your mind as to what you're going to do.
That's for sure.
Because I've had ideas where I thought, I'm going to make a prototype of this. And then I start working on the prototype, and the prototype just does not come easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I start to think, maybe there's a reason that I'm having trouble getting this to prototype.
Yeah.
So then a lot of times I just kind of set that aside and think, I'll come back later.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. In fact, this next one that I'm prototyping, I mean, I'm writing up card text and stuff right now, and I kind of hit a wall a little bit on getting all that stuff written up and, you know, just trying to make it unique and get the variety into it that I want. So, but I mean, I guess that's also probably part of the challenge of game design, you know,
right.
Yeah. It doesn't always come easy the first time.
Right. Yeah. No, it doesn't. Not even a little bit.
No, not at all. Nope.
Let's just fill the whole hour by saying nope.
Yeah, what are you drinking?
Mm.
I ask you that as you take a drink.
As I take a drink. It's called Four Witches. It's by New Holland Brewing Company.
Is it like F-O-U-R witches, as in there are four of them? Or is it F-O-R, as in this drink is for witches?
Where are my witches at? No, this is, it's F-O-U-R.
Four
Actually,
witches.
I wondered if you meant it was like the number four, like, faux witches. That would have been awesome. Uh-huh. It's a black saison. Don't know what that means,
Don't
but
know
it's
either.
Good. Okay. That's okay. It's good. Kind of beer.
New Holland,
Yeah, New Holland. Everything they make is good.
Yeah.
You have to have something by them that wasn't superb. So.
All right, yeah.
Which, you know what? Hey, like a game designer, if you make good product repeatedly, mm-hmm. people will always try your new product. You know why? Because you have a history of making good stuff.
There you go.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, what have we been playing?
What did we do the other night? The you and I and our lovely wives... And your small child.
He didn't play, but we had a game.
Oh, he was playing. He just wasn't playing the same thing we were.
Right. He thought he was playing the game, though. He loved it.
Yeah.
Played several games.
We sure did. Yeah.
What do you want to start with?
Well, we can start at the start of the night, I guess.
So the first thing we played was Dominion.
Dominion,
right?
Yeah. It was your first time.
Oh,
what'd you
man.
Think?
Well, I bought it a couple days later.
Yeah. Okay.
That's. I have not been that excited about a game after playing it.
Uh huh.
In a very long time.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, even games I played at Gen Con that I was like on the show was like, oh, they're so good, and I really liked them.
Yeah.
This game is like, there's a reason the game won the Spiel des Jahres,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
One of the things that annoys me about the game,
okay.
it's nothing to do with the game.
Yeah.
It's, when I saw that it won the Spiel des Jahres, I thought, oh, interesting.
Isn't it Spiel des Jahres?
I don't know.
I think it's Spiel des Jahres. I don't know. Anyway,
cool. I'm an American,
Sorry.
Rob. I am ignorant of other cultures.
Yes, you sure are, Mr. Moai or Maori.
Oh, we were talking about the heads. Yeah. Yeah, the Easter Island heads.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, it's just another, like, I'm always reminded of what Chris Kirkman said when we interviewed him from Dice Hate Me, when he said, mm-hmm. it's not like we need another game with some dour 14th century traitor on the front.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, it's like, I feel like to win an award in Germany, your game has to have, like, that really loose medieval theme.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that really annoys me. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Yeah, what else has won that? Well, obviously Carcassonne has.
Settlers.
Settlers has, yeah.
So, I mean, and it's just like, that's the defining thing of a Euro, is that it's loose on theme. Right. You know, and they say the Ameritrash is heavy on theme.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I love theme.
Yeah, me too. And,
well, I feel what's really cool about a game like Dominion is it doesn't need a theme.
Yeah.
You could play the game without any theme, mm-hmm. and it would not matter.
Yep.
Because
the theme has no bearing on the mechanics and the actual
gameplay.
No,
I mean, I would say the one thing they do is it kind of gives you, like, the memory mnemonic, right?
Yeah, because the names of the cards.
The village does this.
Right.
The cellar does that.
The militia makes you lose cards.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's trying to tie that in with the... one of my favorite ones, by the way, was the chapel, which lets you trash four cards. It's like they're absolving you of your sins.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. I was looking through the cards today as I was opening the box up. But I really... it's just... The game is, like, I can see why there's 12,000 expansions to it.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because making expansions for that game would be the easiest thing you ever did, ever.
Yep.
Because I, at least when I'm designing games, I feel like I have too many ideas when I hit a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's too many ideas for cards, and I have to scale it back, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
With Dominion, you don't have to. You just make another expansion and make a bunch of money.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess what I didn't like was I wish there was more theme to it, even though you don't need it.
Yeah.
It would be cool if there was more of a theme to it,
yeah.
I guess. But it doesn't need it. I mean, the game is pretty much perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah. My wife was gaga for it as well.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, no. We haven't played it yet just because we haven't had a chance. But
sure. It's only been a couple days.
We will probably this weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to start rotating in some of the newer decks.
Yeah.
Because there were some decks we didn't use that were really awesome. Mm-hmm. You should do that, by the way.
Yeah, we plan to. I think the rule book suggests that you play like this, the beginning setup like four or five times and then try the next recommended setup and play that four or five times. So that's our plan. So, you know, we've played that main base setup enough times that we're real comfortable with those cards. I mean, I still don't think I'm experienced enough to really have any kind of distinct strategy going into it. I know I every time I play it, I try a little different approach. So I would not by any means consider myself good at the game yet. But we're comfortable with those cards enough that I think we're going to start putting in some of the other setups next. Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, and you can only be so good at the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's deck building, you know, obviously... is, you know, you can build your deck a certain way, but that five card thing is really limiting. And if you get five junky cards, you just wasted a turn. Now, one of the things I would like to point out was, so I kept buying three cards, the village, which gives you an extra card and two extra actions. Normally you get one action a turn if people haven't played. The market, which gives you an extra action, an extra buy, because normally you can only buy one thing a turn, an extra card, and an extra gold, I think. Mm-hmm. Or an extra...
Coin.
Whatever. One coin. And then the smithy, who gives you +3 cards. Mm-hmm. Like, draw three. And there was a hand where I had 18 cards in my hand. You start with five. And sadly, I didn't even do a ton that turn.
Well, you lay down a bunch of those cards, but then when it was all said and done...
I think I bought 2 cards.
Yeah, right, because you...
Oh, and I did get several coppers, because coppers you can buy for free.
Right.
And I had like 4 or 5 buys. Yeah, so I bought 2 good cards.
Right.
And I did not win the game. I took second.
Mm-hmm. My wife won again.
Oh, by a lot.
Because she is so good at that. I don't even know. I try and ask her what her strategy is, and she goes, oh, well, you know, this time I tried it this way, and this time I tried it that way, and you know... Thanks a lot. She knows what she's doing. She's just not telling
me. She's a sneaky girl.
Right.
So, anyways, super love the game. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought it over and we got to play it.
Yeah, I'm glad you bought it. Yeah, you guys will like it 2-player, too. It works real well.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think I'm even more excited to try it 2-player.
Yeah. Scales wonderfully.
So.
Yeah.
Then we played.
Citadels, which we talked about before in the terms of role reversal.
Role selection.
Role selection, yeah. Yeah, and that was one, the first time playing it, we liked it, okay? I liked it a lot. It was good. And playing it the first time, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of going for it. And I ended up winning, but I don't think that was because of any intuition on my part. I think it was just luck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm that's like Dominion for me as to where I'm not good at the game, even though I've played it 100 times.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a strategy. Well, I do have a strategy. It's a bad strategy, and I lose every time, but I refuse to change my strategy for some reason, I guess because I'm stupid.
One of these days, it's going to be worth it.
That's my plan. One of these days, I'll be vindicated, but probably not, honestly, because... Yeah. You know, like, yeah. If that strategy was ever going to work, it should have worked against two people who didn't know what they were doing. So my wife actually sat that game out.
Right.
So we did a three-player, which I had never played that way before and is really weird because the role selection, you actually choose two roles on every turn. So two different people you are on every turn and you get two turns. That was weird.
Yeah. Well, the reason I won is because I on my second turn, I like had a bunch of money. And then on my second turn, I had the architect. And I built a
three districts.
Yeah, three districts. I built a district, and I was like, all right, that's it. And you said, wait, aren't you going to build two more? Like, what? I can do that? Yeah, the architect. Okay, sure. And I just threw down two more. I didn't plan for that to happen. I didn't purposely have that much money set aside. It was just pure happenstance that I was able to do that.
Right.
And so that's mainly the reason why I won.
Well, but after that, to your credit, you did a lot of defense because you had very cheap districts, which the warlord character destroys districts that are cheap without paying for it, without even having to pay any money for it.
Yeah.
So you did a very good job of defending that. And I tried to set you up a couple times and it didn't work. So,
No, that game clearly has a lot of variety and a lot of strategy built into it. So I'd be happy to play that again.
Yeah. And it's a game that I'd love to try it with you with four players so that you could see what it's normally like when I play it.
Definitely.
That is a game that seems like it'd be fun with five or six as well.
Oh, it's playable with that many?
I think it's playable up to six.
Oh, cool.
Because there's so many roles.
Yeah.
You just dole them out because there's nine different roles you can be. So,
okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think you'd probably bury one at the beginning and then the last person would ditch two.
Sure.
So,
okay. Yeah. And then moving on from that, we played
Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Yeah. And it was your first time since
Gen Con 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah.
And I wanted to play it because my wife has never played it and I wanted to introduce her to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to her after you guys left and asked what she thought about it. And she said it would take some getting used to.
Yeah. She didn't seem as excited about it as we were.
Yeah, no, I mean, she had a good time playing it.
Okay.
But it was a little different for her. We don't normally play games like that.
Mm-hmm.
She really likes co-op games. So she likes, you know, especially learning a co-op game is really easy when you're playing with experienced players because there's always people that are willing to give you advice and ask questions, you know.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're really working as a team. She likes that. There's just a lot happening in that game.
It's true.
So she kind of felt like there was a lot going on, you know, and I kind of feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've played so many strategy games, I'm used to that.
Yeah.
So it's a little different for her. So she wasn't as into it. I will say, having not played it in so long, coming back to play it again, I have a couple things that I'm not a fan of about that game.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not saying they're flaws with the game.
Okay.
Because I don't think they are. I think it's just the way I enjoy playing games.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you played the Tachyon character.
Yeah.
And I think if I'd played Tachyon, I would like the game better.
Okay.
Because you played the Wraith. I played the Wraith, who was fun, but so much of that game feels like you're barely doing anything. And I don't like that. So on my turn, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to put this piece of equipment on and do nothing. And wait for next turn. Mm-hmm. And then next turn I can attack one time. And then I'm done. And I wait for next turn.
Yeah.
That kind of bothered me. Like, I feel like I understand the game is supposed to be hard. And the game is hard. I mean, like, you got to work as a team if you want to win that game.
Yeah, for sure.
So it just kind of bothered me that I wasn't doing much.
Mm-hmm. Part of that, I think, might have been the team that we picked. With Ra and Tachyon and the Wraith and who else do we have out there? I can't remember now.
It was not Legacy.
No, we should have had Legacy.
It should have been.
Yeah. The Angel person, Fnatic.
Fnatic,
yeah. That was maybe an awkward team to put out there. And we were playing in the Mars base, which turned out to be a lot more difficult than I'd ever had it be before.
Well, especially playing with Ra, and we had Ra. My wife was playing Ra. Mm-hmm. She was sitting to the left of the villain, bad guy, yeah.
And the environment.
So the Mars environment likes to make fire damage not work.
Right, and Ra's fire damage basically exclusively.
And Ra was our heavy hitter.
Yeah.
So we did win. My wife died on the last turn when mm-hmm. we won.
Right.
So that was cool because it really doesn't matter then. It's not like it's player elimination. Yeah,
but the only reason we won is because the environment was killing us all and happened to take out Baron Blade before we did.
We would have taken him out the next turn.
But we also would have died on the next
turn. No, I meant if you could have gotten rid of the
that
crappy environment.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like I wish you could play two cards every turn.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means the game is easier, then I think you should scale the villain up to make the villain harder.
Well, there's some pretty tough villains.
I believe that. Yeah. I just mean, I felt like I wasn't doing enough during the game.
Sure, and I absolutely hear that. Absolutely.
I probably would enjoy the game more, I would think, as a two-player where I'm playing two heroes.
Yeah, probably.
Or even as a solo where I'm playing four heroes.
Yeah.
Just because I would be doing more. I would like that better. Okay. So,
I hear that. And now, when you say that out loud, I realize that I always kind of feel that way at the beginning of that game every time. But after three or four rounds, I get into it and I forget about that.
And it certainly didn't ruin the experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
It took a little while to get used to that, though. I kept feeling like I can't do anything. And it didn't help that the Wraith's power is just to give themselves a buffer to not take damage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Ra, that my wife was playing, her power is like to attack. Yeah. So she could play a one-shot and then attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you try different characters, you might feel a little different, too.
Well, and Tachyon really seemed cool because you were able to do two of everything every turn.
Yeah, depending on what equipment I could get out there.
And that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Because she's fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But don't get me wrong. I still think it's an awesome game. Mm-hmm. That was one thing that bothered me a little bit about it. Okay. So, you know.
Yeah, totally valid. Okay, right on. Well, we should probably move on, huh?
Sure.
Yeah. To the mechanic of the week.
Mechanic of the week.
I thought you were going to shout it out. You
did. I know. Yeah. I like to keep you on your toes. I was waiting for it. Yeah. I know. That's why I would like to give you that awkward pause.
Yeah. Thank you. I think we actually had a mechanic suggested from Twitter, didn't we?
Yeah. I don't know that they meant it to be our mechanic. They wanted us to talk about it, though, when we asked for questions.
Right.
And it's actually a good mechanic to talk about. So it was suggested by Neil Roberts, who's Potted Meat on Twitter. And he suggested the making moves anonymously in games,
mm-hmm.
like the ability of that and the ramifications of that. And what's interesting is today I was actually thinking about something like that.
Okay.
There's a game design idea I have that I'm going to pitch in a few shows, so I'm not going to get into it now.
Okay.
But suffice it to say, the goal of the game is you're trying to find people who will give you stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And while you're trying to do that, you're searching for like decks, right? So like when you find these people, you get a deck of cards and they're going to help you via this deck of cards, right? But I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you could fake people out and they'd be like, I found these people, they're going to give me this resources that I need. But it's not, it's actually something else.
Hmm.
But they don't know that you've done that to them, right? Like they don't know. Man, I'm just punching this mic.
You keep knocking it
all
around.
I hit the mic stand like four times.
You're talking with your hands too much.
Gotta talk with my hands. That's how I talk. All right, we're in business now.
Okay.
I moved it so I can fling my arms about while I talk.
So you can wave your arms all crazy. Go on.
Anyway, so I was thinking, I wonder how you could do that without them knowing. And then, you know, but it didn't even occur to me that that was a mechanic. Like, I didn't even think about it, about the anonymous thing. And then he said that in the question. So that is an awesome mechanic of the week. So let us talk about that.
I don't know how to do that.
Well, I mean, let's talk about some games that already have it. Very simple, easy version. Apples to apples. You anonymously pick something. You shuffle it into a deck.
Okay.
Then somebody picks a winner. Mm-hmm. They don't know who they're picking, right? Mm-hmm. There's a super, super easy way to do that. Games where you do bidding, where you write down a bid.
Yeah.
That Gravediggers game.
Okay.
So, no, see, that's not really anonymous. That's a bad example. So I guess what he's probably referring to, at least what I'm interested in talking about, is
mm-hmm.
how do you work into a game the ability to do things, like screw with other players without them knowing. I always remember with role-playing games, this is something that bothered me, because you would want to do something that maybe you didn't want the party to know about, the rest of your group. And so it's like, how do I tell the DM about that without telling everyone else? So I'll write him a note. But then you write him a note and you give him a note and then everybody knows,
right? Right. Or you say, hey, can I talk to you in the other room?
Right.
Yeah.
So that kind of blows the anonymity thing.
Yeah. So I think the spirit of his question was to handle like movement. Is what the first thing that came to my mind, movement of pieces on a board. Which and the first thing I thought of course again was D&D, like you just said, that if you are a party versus the monsters, obviously the party doesn't care where everybody is. I mean, you know, they're always visible to themselves and they can move their pieces on the board, and you trust the DM to pretend that the monsters don't know where you are. Likewise, if the monsters are hidden, you trust the GM to be moving them around fairly in secret, right?
You mean honestly?
Honestly, yeah.
I don't trust the GM to do either one of those things, just to be clear. Well, this is actually brings up something we did talk about a little bit on a show when we had Ben Rossett on from Marzian's Mechanics.
Yeah.
He had talked about the idea of a ghost player. To where you would have two pieces.
Well, that's right.
And you would move them to two different locations, and one of them would have like a thumbs up on the bottom or something, or something, some symbol that said, this is my real character, and the other one would be like, this is my ghost. So that's one way to, that's a very simple way to do it.
Yeah.
Another way you could do that, this feels really clunky. I was trying to think if you were doing a card game where you would be drawing cards consistently, if there were two of everything, so somehow when you drew a card, you got two of them, right? So they were matching, right? So you could play one card anonymously into like a pile, and stuff would be happening, and at the end you could claim what you played. That would mean a lot of unique cards that had duplicates that you would hold on to, and that sounds kind of lame.
Okay, I'm not sure how to... Yeah, I wouldn't sure how to fit that into something anyway.
Everyone turn your back and play a card on the table.
Yeah.
But it's a valid thing because it... I think it's a good mechanic that could make games really fun.
Yeah, you just have to... You have to figure out how to keep that... keep it fair. Keep it open and honest without being open. You know?
So keep it honest.
Keep it honest without keeping it open, because I mean that's a pretty key part of games. I mean, obviously, in a lot of card games, the hand of cards you have is private to you, but everybody can see that your hands are on the table and you're holding those cards, and so they're not going to accuse you of cheating,
right?
You know, but when it comes to moving guys on a board or something, that's you can't really do that. I don't know how you would do that.
Well, one thing you could do, this is a thought.
Okay.
You and I have talked about this before. I don't know if we actually put this on a show or not. We may have, but we talked about the idea of having a screen. So you've got a little screen in front of you. So this could work really well for movement, right?
Yeah.
So behind the screen, I've got a little mimic of the board, right? I guess mimic, little mock-up of the board.
Facsimile?
Yes, a smaller version. And I move a little piece around on there, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the square that I was on. I count off my 8 squares that I can move or whatever. And
Battleship.
Right. So I set it in that place, and everyone else does the same thing. And then we reveal what we had.
Okay.
At the same time.
Yeah.
So now everyone has made a move without knowing what everyone else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, now we have to compare. And now we take actions based on that movement. Mm-hmm. What I don't like about that is a screen is kind of a clunky, expensive thing to put into a box.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Gosh, it seems like there should be a better way to handle that. But gosh, I don't know how. You could do a lot. You could do some cool stuff if you could nail that structure.
I know.
If you could make that work. Because to have people, you know, we've talked before about a game of, you know, thieves trying to break into a bank or something, or you know, espionage, trying to steal secrets, or one guy being the security team, the other guy being the team of thieves, you know, and you got to figure out where each other are. I mean, there are dozens of ways to come at that kind of thing, of everybody working within the same space, but independent of each other and secretly in secret from each other. If we could figure out the right way to handle that, that could be cool. I mean, it could be really great stuff.
I mean, I think of a co-op game with a saboteur in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where how fun would that be? You've got a co-op game, right? Except for one person is like the saboteur.
Yeah.
You know, so you all drew a card and found out that one of you is a saboteur.
Yeah.
So you're playing this game, and that person could be taking anonymous actions so that you don't know that that person is purposely trying to sabotage. Now, actually, that would be really doable.
Okay.
So that would be a card-playing game, right? We'll say. Maybe it's a cardboard game, you know, so there's a board, but you're using cards to determine what you do, right?
Okay.
And if you're acting as a team, the saboteur could be throwing a card down into the pile. That pile gets picked up, shuffled, and then played one by one, or picked up, shuffled, and then laid out, right? So that gives a chance for the saboteur to be throwing crappy cards in there to be hurting you, right?
Okay.
Without you actually knowing who put the card in there, right?
So everybody, every round, everybody has to throw one card in the pot, and then they're all revealed, and then shuffle it, and then they're all revealed simultaneously. And one of them every time is crappy, but you're not sure who threw that one in there.
Right.
Okay.
So outwardly, a portion of the game would have to be acting as a team trying to win, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Inwardly, during this card hand phase, the saboteur would be playing things to screw you up. Now, you might be able to put in several anonymous pieces
mm-hmm.
to try and make this not work. You know what I mean?
Sure.
To meaning several phases where the saboteur could be doing things
yeah.
to hurt the outcome of the thing.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That could work.
I mean, that's the best way I can think of to try and make that work. And I actually think that could be a fun game if you came up with the right scenario for that,
mm-hmm.
to where you've got a lot of things happening on the board, and then these little mini sections happening where you're trying to do things, and the saboteur is able to throw things in. Now, what would be interesting is I'm trying to think, just making drums on my kneecaps.
Yep.
Trying to think if. There was a way. Gosh. So this is where it gets tough with the anonymous thing again. It would almost be cool if there were four, if you've got a four to six, two to six, well, it'd have to be at least a 3-6 player game, because if one person's the saboteur, if it's not you, I it's know, probably right. the other guy.
Right.
So you have six decks of cards, right? Somehow the saboteur is able to reach in and get their deck, right? Without anyone else knowing.
Mm-hmm.
They took their saboteur deck because it looks on the outside just like everyone else's deck.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're drawing their cards, they're getting sabotage cards.
Okay.
Whereas everyone else is getting. Oh! Oh! Yeah.
Okay.
I've got it. So, you've got a box with your cards in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have two decks in the box. The decks are right next to each other. You'd have to have the box set up in a way that people couldn't see you reaching in, right?
Okay.
So you would reach in and take one of card off one of the two decks. So draw two cards. If you're the saboteur, you're going to be drawing off the saboteur deck, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're... And maybe, because you have to be able to keep it up with some good cards, you have to draw off the good guy deck too, right? So you draw a card off the good guy deck, you draw a card off the saboteur deck. And then the good guys are trying to force each other to play extra cards, because the whole point is to try and reveal who the saboteur is, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
So the saboteur would be playing two games. They would be playing the let's win this game outwardly, but inwardly they'd be playing the let's not win this game. So let's say it was Sentinels, right?
Okay.
Let's say it's Sentinels. One of the good guys is actually a villain.
Okay.
And he's trying to screw over everyone else.
Okay.
Now, in Sentinels, it doesn't work because it's an open-faced game.
Yeah.
But what if everyone was throwing a card down anonymously, like, here's my action this turn, and then you flip it over, and it's like, I hit the bad guy, I hit the bad guy, I hit the bad guy, I heal the bad guy. What?
Yeah.
But if you can't tell who's doing that action, so...
Okay, here's one thought, all right? You have a four-player game,
mm-hmm.
and each player plays from their own exclusive deck, so there's not a communal deck, there's...
Okay.
Okay. They each have their own exclusive deck, right? Okay. And then, when you set up the game, you start where each of those decks is actually in its own tuck box. Okay.
Okay.
And all those decks, they have all the same card backs on them. One of those decks, though, on the card faces is always printed Saboteur.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so and those some of those cards are outright damaging. Other ones are kind of neutral, and some are helpful to kind of balance this stuff out. Well, maybe not. Well, maybe there's just simply one card in there that says you are the Saboteur. I don't know. Anyway, one of those decks in its own special, separate, closed box is the Saboteur deck. You start the game, and outwardly, all four of those small boxes look identical. You start the game by shuffling those around, laying those four closed boxes out, and say, everybody grab one.
I'm picking up what you're laying down. Yeah,
and then everybody then picks up their deck and opens their box, pulls out the cards, and looks through their deck, and one of them says, oh, holy crap, I'm Saboteur, because I have a Saboteur card in here. And then...
Right. Well, then they also... I mean, theoretically, their deck on the front side, mm-hmm. the side they look at, could look completely different.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, it could have good cards and bad cards, but it could very easily be made completely obvious mm-hmm. who they were. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which, right. if they were the Saboteur or not.
Right. So the problem then becomes, oh, well, okay, well, then everybody has to play a card. You throw a card down, and you mix them all up face down, and then you turn them all over at the same time. And then you don't know which card came from who.
Right.
Is the idea. So that's the idea.
I like it.
As a way to handle that.
That's a way to do it.
It seems kind of clean. And then I guess the face of every deck would have to be branded with a separate color or something, so you could split them all back out at the end of the game. Because you'd know which one is yours anyway.
Right. As long as that color did not relate to anything in the game?
Oh, yeah, no. Just simply be for separating cards at the end.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like the idea of making a game where
mm-hmm.
somebody can act, you can act independently and no one can know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, something else you could do in there to make it more interesting even okay. would be to have it, say it was a group of thieves, right? And one of them is actually like the informant.
Sure.
But it's a group of thieves. So everyone could have some screw you cards, right?
Yeah, they're all bad dudes anyway. Because it's a
group of thieves.
Yeah, sure.
So you're trying to steal stuff from one another.
Yeah.
And two, if you wanted to do it like it was a police informant,
mm-hmm.
you could set up certain things that they wouldn't be allowed to do, right? It's like police informants in real life can't shoot anyone. They mm-hmm. can't. They're not supposed to do drugs. I was watching this thing where, like, this police informant, like, I don't know, he was undercover for, like, 2 years, and then they almost made him, like, snort some cocaine, and he, like, faked it, because if he had, they would have blown the case.
Can't break the law when you're working for the law.
Well, you can break the law somewhat.
Oh.
Obviously.
You can break some laws when you're working for the law, but not all the laws, because the laws are the laws, and some laws are bigger than other laws, and, you know, so you can break the one law, but you can't break... Okay. Anyway.
I was really glad that stopped, because I was done with it way yeah. close to the beginning of that.
Anyway.
I think that was a successful discussion.
I think so. Yeah. So, anonymous actions and influence... is a fantastic idea and could be incredibly difficult to implement. It's kind of the gist of our conversation there.
Yes.
Yes.
It doesn't unfortunately help me for the thing I was trying to think of.
Okay.
So when I pitch that game, we'll tackle that subject.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
But yeah, so thanks, but no thanks.
Cool.
So I think it's time now for practicing the pitch.
Practicing the pitch, and it's my turn tonight, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. You were so excited about Dominion at the start of this show that I actually have a deck-building game to pitch to you tonight.
I'll be more excited then about your pitch because it's a deck-building game. You think it'd have won the Spiel der Hoosiers?
No.
No,
I don't think that it will.
Because I've heard about the theme, and it's got way too much of a theme to win any awards.
You're right, yeah. It's definitely heavy on theme.
Terrible game designer with your heavy on theme, says the guy who's getting his cowboy gunfighting game published.
Right. Now, I've talked before on the show about how I like RoboCop, right? And I like RoboCop.
You like RoboCop?
I do like RoboCop. I like RoboCop because he's kind of like the modern Frankenstein character. You know?
I wondered how you were going to tie this back.
Yeah. He's a Frankenstein, right? He's
Yeah, basically.
But he's not the traditional Frankenstein. He is a more modern Frankenstein.
Isn't the term cyborg?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's a heroic and tragic character. The original Frankenstein Frankenstein was the doctor.
Right.
The creature was the monster. The monster was a sad, tragic character, right?
Cool.
The ultimate tragedy is this being given life against its will, and it trying to deal with the horrors of a life that it doesn't understand and an existence that it has no right to. Okay, the modern Prometheus was the subtitle of the original story. And RoboCop kind of takes that tragic idea of this guy when RoboCop is given life, he is empty. He's just simply a lifetime of law enforcement experience without any soul or any person within him to understand how to handle that. And of course, a big part of the story is him regaining his memory of his self and catching the bad guys. And it turns into an excellent action movie and good political satire and social commentary and all that stuff too. Anyway,
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. But I'm fascinated by that idea, the idea of this monstrous being that is brought into a world against its will. Okay. I've always liked Frankenstein, always since I was a little kid. So I wanted to think of a game tied into Frankenstein, and knowing then that Frankenstein is the name of the doctor and not the monster, the game that I have to pitch here is called Frankenstein's Legacy.
Ooh.
Okay. The setup is that the players are scientists, and they are scientists who have discovered the journals and logs of Dr. Henry Frankenstein years and years and years later. Okay. And they are trying to follow his old notes to try and recreate their own monsters. And they want to be the first to create their own monster and publish their works. And so it's a deck building game where you act as this scientist, as this doctor trying to assemble your own monster. Okay, that's the basic idea.
Fair enough.
And it's like Dominion, let's say. You have that idea of you're spending currency to get cards to put into your deck, right? Okay. But this one has some more specific card types, all right? And I'll go into the breakdown of the card types here in a minute. But the ultimate goal is to build a monster. So obviously you're going to be trying to get body parts, okay?
Yeah, now we're talking.
Yeah, and so you're going to be trying to get body parts, and you're going to try and assemble your monster. And the first person to assemble a whole monster, excuse me, a whole monster, arms, legs, body, head, brain, heart. I think that's probably as far as I would go for all the parts. We don't want to go into the detail of internal organs and things.
Liver.
Yeah. All those key components. The first person to put that together and then put life into that body by shocking it with electricity is the winner. All right. So, but you can't just simply assemble these parts, because some of these parts are not going to work. And some of these parts are not compatible together. And all of these parts, these body parts, need repair work, because they've been rotten underground for a while, or they've been chopped up in the anatomy lab or whatever. So the first phase of the game is, of course, getting all these cards. The second phase of the game, and you're doing this at various times, is you have this workbench where you're going to be playing cards in your workbench to try and condition these parts to get them ready for the operating table. And then finally, you install these body parts onto the operating table where they will be assembled into the monster. Okay, so card types. We have bolts. Bolts are connective pieces. And maybe that would be sutures, or maybe that would be grafts or staples or something. Some kind of cards that represent putting pieces together, right?
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah, we have electricity, because we need to use electricity to shock life into these things. We have assistance, because you need lab assistance. You need Igor to go out and dig up parts and get stuff for you. You need lab equipment. You need your beakers and your pliers and all kinds of different stuff. And then, of course, you need some kind of currency stuff that you're going to use to buy some of this equipment, buy some body parts, and hire assistance, right?
Right.
So the game starts with you you have your base setup deck, and you're going to start getting parts, okay? You're going to start getting components to build up your laboratory, okay? You can't actually get body parts, though, until you hire an assistant, because you're not going to get your hands dirty by digging up body parts and
stuff. Of course
not,
you're a scientist.
Right. So you have to put your lab together and get more money, and then you're going to be able to hire assistants, and then you send your assistants out to go get body parts, okay? So phase one is getting all your equipment together, getting your bolts, your electricity, your assistants, and your currency, okay? And your lab equipment. You then are going to dig up parts with your assistants, okay? So on a turn, you might play an assistant card, and your assistant card is going to need some equipment to go digging in the graves, and he's going to come back with body parts. Now, the thing about your standard deck building game is that all of those potential cards that you're going to buy, all those components you're going to buy, they're all in these decks face up on the table. You know exactly what you're getting when you buy it.
Right.
And that would be the same for the assistance, for the currency, for the lab equipment, for the bolts. But when it comes to body parts, that's a separate deck that's face down.
That makes sense.
Because you don't know what you're going to get until you dig it up. So you don't know what the next body part is coming up. Okay, and those are not all in, legs are not in one deck and arms in another deck. Legs, arms, and all things, those are all shuffled into one larger deck.
So okay. Maybe a better assistant would allow you to get a couple body parts.
Yeah, or he'll let you peek. Yeah, that's the idea. An average or lame assistant, he's going to take the top one off, first one he can find, whatever. A better assistant will be able to take the first two cards off the deck and pick which one you want, and then bury the other one in the deck. I'm a really good guy. I might be able to take the top four cards off a deck and pick which one you want. So there's
no promises, but if you're looking at the top four, there's a better chance to get the arm you're looking for.
Exactly right. So after that, then the next thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to lay these parts out. And of course, when you get a part, it goes in your discard, and you're not going to be able to get that back in your hand until later when you shuffle and redraw that card, right? When it comes back around. I keep almost dropping this. I'm going to set it down.
It's this big, awkward sketchbook.
Yeah, I should use a smaller, more manageable notebook, but I like my sketchbook.
It's a nice sketchbook. Mm-hmm. It's artsy.
Right. So anyway, so then what you're going to do is you're going to, when these body parts come back up in your hand, you then need to lay them out on your workbench, because you need to test them. You need to shock some electricity into them to get them working, And so you're going to have to start with this body part. You're going to have to attach it to a piece of lab equipment with a bolt, okay? And then you need to put electricity into it. And so you're going to be chaining these cards together on your workbench using a system of icons that say, this piece of lab equipment works with this kind of body part. And those would be identifiable with each other with certain color icons or something, This beaker can be chained together with this arm because they both have yellow icons. Okay, that kind of thing.
Cool.
Okay. And maybe these bolts and connective pieces can be used to bridge gaps. If I have a blue piece of equipment and a yellow part, I can use a bolt that allows me to connect a blue to a yellow. All right? Give you options in connecting those things. So then you have to shock electricity into that thing to make sure that it works. And then you're going to have to roll a die against... a total of scores that are on those cards, add some numbers together to get your target score, and you have to roll higher than that, or maybe it's lower than that. We'll see. And then if you succeed at shocking and testing that body part, then you can install it on your workbench, or excuse me, on your operating table. And cool. That one's ready to go. Right. And then as you're going along, you're trying to get more of these parts together, and you're trying to build a monster with body parts that fit together. And then the last step is shocking electricity into that. You roll your final die, and if you succeed, you win the game. That's the idea.
Nice. What if you fail? You just keep trying?
Well, yeah, you can keep trying. All of those body parts that just didn't work, maybe they'll all go back in your deck. Maybe you have to lose one to your deck and try again. That's what I'm thinking. You have to throw one back in your deck. Every time you fail, it goes back into your discard.
Right, because you don't want them to have to tear apart the whole monster.
Right, that would kind of suck.
Yeah. You could make them, though, pick and trash. One of, like, have to pitch.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Of their choice.
Yeah.
One of those did not work. What caused it? It was his left leg. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'll go get another left leg.
Right, yeah. So that exactly, that kind of thing is what I'm thinking. So every player would kind of have, they'd have their own separate game board that would have their workbench section and their operating table section, you know, where those cards would be laid out to just keep, you wouldn't necessarily need that, but it would be help you stay organized, you know?
You thinking 2 to 4 on this?
I'm thinking 2 to 4. Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, otherwise that would be a big game.
Yeah.
If you had 6, you'd be looking at 12 boards.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think one board. For,
oh, sorry. Yeah, so you'd still be looking at 6 separate boards, which would mm-hmm. take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that's the idea. Comments?
Well, I think it's a nice spin on a deck building game mm-hmm. that makes it not just like a deck building, like Dominion style game, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's some more things to it that make it not worthy of some European award. no, I mean, I'm kidding. I really like that you are doing the normal deck building, but then you're trying to shuffle stuff out of your deck into play.
Yeah.
And then move it from one place into play into another place.
Mm-hmm.
That's unique. And mm-hmm. I think that kind of gives it a little extra. It's a nice spin on that deck building mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And especially when you've got things like the assistants to where they're running out and getting those cards. Mm-hmm. I assume you'd have to pay them to do that, or you would just have mm-hmm. to play your assistant that turn.
Well, you need to have bring currency out in your hand. You know, you can spend currency to buy new equipment and hire new assistants, but on your turn, you're gonna have to pay them something to go out there. Yeah, it might cost you know 10 to buy that, to hire that assistant, but it might only cost you 2 to send them out to get a part.
The only thing I could see that would stink about that would be.
Mm-hmm.
I got the assistant in my hand, or I got 2 assistants in my hand and no money. Now you're waiting the entire mm-hmm. next time.
Okay.
I almost feel like you should be able to play those like an action in Dominion.
Okay. Like that would make sense. Out. Sure. That would make sense.
Alternatively, because uh-huh. you'd have some space on the text in the card,
mm-hmm.
you could also make it so that if you paid them, they did better.
Oh, yeah.
So mm-hmm. if you just send them out, I do this. If you send me out and you pay me 2, I mm-hmm. do this. 4, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure, yeah,
makes that's sense. Just a thought.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's the kind of stuff that I need to think about and I need to play with. Yeah, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. the one thing about Dominion that was rough was some of your turns were just like, this sucks.
Yeah, I can't do anything. Yeah.
So, which, you know, I mean, because Dominion plays so fast,
yeah,
it's not that bad. No. That was one of the things about Sentinels was like, it doesn't play super fast, because even if the players play fast, then you get mm-hmm. to the environment. Then you get to the villain.
Yeah.
So that kind of slows it down a little. But with Dominion, it was like, I'd go and be like, oh, I didn't have anything to do. And then, boom, it was my turn again. And I was like, oh, no crap, it's my turn again already. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
So that was nice. Yeah, I like that. So would you basically, you think you'd have like, okay, this is the deck phase. Like, we all do our deck thing. Now we go back around, and it's our... Anybody who's got stuff on their workbench can now use that.
No, I would say you can do any of those things at any time on any turn.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it would depend on what cards you end up with in your hand, if you're going to go buy equipment or if you're going
to
try and
get some cards. Right, because you need electricity to test it, so you'd have
exactly.
to... Exactly. But you could... You get that foot, you can put it on your workbench.
Yep.
So the next time you get electricity, you can test it.
I was thinking you would do it only within that current hand on that current turn, but maybe you're right. Maybe you could throw it on your workbench and save it for later. That would make sense.
The thing I don't like about the way you're saying is mm-hmm. without doing it all in one turn is then you're just at the will of the random cards.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's rough.
And you're going to have a lot less body parts in your hand.
Right.
In your deck, then you're going to have other equipment. Yeah.
Because you don't want to have to buy 40 body parts.
Right.
Now, what you could do is you can say only 2 body parts fit on your workbench at a time. But obviously the operating table fits a whole body.
I would say only one body part on your work. Well, okay, two. Yeah, maybe two is a little more options. The only reason I say
two is that way if you get two in your hand, you could throw them both up there.
Yeah.
And then you could test one at a time. You could also, you could have a rule that says you can put them two on together, but you have to test them together. So, and that might make it harder.
Hmm.
So if they fail, you lose two instead of one, right? So I was a little risk reward there on the player's part.
Yeah. You know, another thing I was thinking is that when you test that body part in the workbench, depending on the success of your die roll, if you succeed wildly, I would like to have some kind of additional tokens or something you can put on that part for when you install it on the operating table. Then it means that's an especially good part.
So you'd get a bonus.
A bonus to your next roll.
That's even something you could have with different assistants.
Sure.
Like if you have a really good assistant, he brings back when you put. Oh,
he's going to get better quality stuff, maybe.
Yeah, but the only problem is how do you track that in your deck? Yeah, oh, it was true. Igor that got that. But you could have an assistant who had the ability that you could immediately put something to your workbench.
Sure.
And have them be very expensive, right?
There you go.
And maybe you had to pay to make that work every turn.
Sure.
But that would be, because that could give you a distinct advantage in the game if you're having a good turn, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like Dominion, would you have the ability to multiply on turns to where you could do a lot more on some turns based on drawing more cards and that kind of stuff?
I think so. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I just was curious. Mm-hmm. I think it sounds like a fantastic idea.
I really like it a lot. It's not anything I'm going to do right now, though.
Right. No, we've talked about this to where you said, this is a big game. Because I had said when you pitched the other two prototypes to me, I said, make this one because this one sounds like a lot of fun. I really want to play it.
Yeah, I would love to, but it's too big for the level that I'm at right now. I mean, I would definitely pitch it to a publisher, you know?
Right.
But since we're both talking, or at least I'm talking right now in terms of thinking small scale for self-publishing for this first time.
Right.
I'm not going to be pitching this to a publisher right now.
Just remember, if you want to pitch it to a publisher, you need a prototype.
I know. Yeah. But I mean,
you don't have to have a prototype. Mm-hmm. You could technically, I guess, just pitch an idea to a publisher, but...
Yeah. But like this is something that if I was going to go to, I might come back to this to get ready for Gen Con for next year, you know?
That's a good point,
you know, but
this would be a fun one, actually, to give a test to at Gen Con.
Cause
it would catch a lot of people's eye.
I think
with the Frankenstein and such.
It'd be a lot of work to put it all together, but it could be a lot of fun.
Right.
Yeah. So I wonder, you know, it could be scaled down for a smaller prototype or something for demo purposes or I don't know, whatever. But yeah, so there you go. That's the idea.
Awesome.
Cool. So, I guess we can move on. We have some plugs for tonight. And we have
one Twitter question because we covered the other one.
Right.
By making it the mechanic of the week. I don't have a plug this week.
All right.
So, I know you have one, though.
I do have one. Yeah. This is a website that I found last week. It's opengameart.org. Opengameart.org. It's basically a website full of free and mostly free and, you know, open source graphics, a lot of 3D stuff, a lot of 2D stuff. There's sound effects, there's music, there's all kinds of stuff on here. The intention of it is that it's for video games, for independent people who are making their own video games. You can go on here, you can take artwork to use in your 3D stuff or in your 2D, you know, old Squaresoft style 16-bit RPGs and all that stuff. But there's also a ton of great stuff that can be used here for board games. There's all kinds of tiled textures and stuff ready to go, ready made. That with the intention with this website is you would use that for tiling in your 3D graphics for tiling your water textures and your grass textures. But it's also stuff that could easily be repurposed for board games, for card games. Even if you're just putting together a prototype and don't want to hire an artist, but you want to kind of get the feel of it together.
Right.
All kinds of stuff. You can go on here and search in the 2D art and just do a search for portraits, and you can find literally thousands of portraits of characters. And that's just look awesome. At them all. It's super cool. Yeah. You know, I don't, a lot of it they say use it only with credit, only if you're going to give credit to the original artist, which might be difficult to do in terms of a board game or a card game. But I think I'm going to probably use it a lot when it comes to prototyping stuff.
Right.
So I don't just end up with blank cards.
And if you're going to show the prototype around, or we're going to use the prototype on the show, I mean, totally can easily give a shout out to the people
of
who
course.
We...
Of course, I mean. Right. Yeah, and the idea being, you know, if you're going to show this to a publisher, you say to the publisher, this is stuff I found online, this is not, I mean, it's free artwork, but it's there to give you a sense of the style of game, not, it wouldn't be used as final artwork.
Right, know? And I can give you a list of the artists if you like it.
There you go, exactly. So I think it's cool. I spent about an hour looking through all the stuff, and it's just chock full. I mean, there's a lot of garbage on there, naturally, because there's going to be, because it's all free stuff that people drew at home. But there's some really impressive stuff on there, too. If anybody out there ever plays with Blender at all, that's open source 3D software, there is a ton of Blender stuff on here, tons of models and rigged character models and things ready to go for animation. Really, really awesome stuff.
That's cool. Wish we'd have known about that before when we used Blender for stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. So it's very, very awesome. So that's my plug, opengameart.org. What's our Twitter question, sir?
Twitter question is, do you have, this is from Dan Masick, or is D Masick on Twitter. He wants to know, do you have any plans to revisit some of your favorite pitches that you have actually prototyped and update us? That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Yes. anytime that we do a prototype of a game,
mm-hmm.
And we play it, we're pretty much guaranteed we're going to record that together.
Definitely.
And then we're going to put it out as a bonus episode.
Right.
And we
actually still haven't done that with Ramblers yet.
We haven't, because the first time we played Ramblers, we were kind of in a rush to get it played before Gen Con.
Right.
So, yes, we haven't. That is something coming up we will do with Ramblers, I think, when mm-hmm. my next prototype comes through.
Yep.
Because I made some changes to the gameplay, mm-hmm. and I'd like to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will record that and put it on here.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Other prototypes, I mean, obviously, Damsels in Distress, that one we did a long time ago. I haven't done anything with that since Gen Con, partially because my computer crashed and I've lost all that data. Oh, by the way, I finally got a quote for hard drive recovery. Guess how much?
300.
Higher.
400.
Okay, what saved me, all right, I was talking with the account rep in advance, and I said, my budget's $500.
Uh-huh.
I need this to be $500 or less, otherwise I can't do it. And she came back to me a week later and she said, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being your hard drive was shot with a gun and it was the hardest recovery you've ever done, yours is a firmware failure and it was about a 9.
Oh!
So the normal cost for that type of recovery with my brand hard drive would have been $800.
Ouch.
$800. But she said, but I talked to the engineer and he knows what he's done this particular thing before. Apparently they've done this for specific failure with a specific brand hard drive. So if anybody out there has a 500 gig CTEC hard drive, back it up. But so she got me down to $550.
Nice.
And I still have to spend another $130 for an external drive for them to put all the data onto and send it back to me. So I'm still, what is that, 680?
What's it, a terabyte drive?
It's another 500 gig drive. So it's an expensive drive.
I'm sure there's a markup there.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. So 680, and I'll get all that stuff back.
I mean, it's tough because it's worth it to get your stuff back.
It sucks. Sucks real bad. But, I mean, that's 4.5 years of family photos and videos and things.
Right.
And, I mean... $700 to get all that stuff back. That's
right.
We have to. Plus,
and now you'll be getting a cloud drive.
Right. You know, plus all the Photoshop stuff, the work that I've been doing for the past 10 years. You know, I probably have 10 years worth of stuff on that drive. So,
right.
Anyway, sorry, off topic.
Yes, but so yeah, the plan is anytime we do anything with a game, we're going to talk to you guys about it. I don't think we'd ever repitch the same game, at least not off that I can think of, but. But we'll definitely come back and give updates.
If we have updates or if we have a big revision to an old idea, we might come back to that.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, but I got off track with Damsels. Damsels, I'm not sure how much more I'm going to do with that. I still really like the idea, but I don't know that it's going to be a good sell for my first project.
Right.
So I'm going to move on to something else. So probably won't see too much about Damsels. But the tower game that I pitched a couple weeks ago.
And that we did the play for right after that.
Right.
Right after it played.
Yep. We'll see how that goes. And your conservative versus developer game. I think there's I mean, you're continuing to modify that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've been working on it a little bit. I'm working on a prototype for the next pitch I'm going to give on the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is because some friends of ours would like to play it. So I'm going to be making a prototype and shipping it out to them.
Cool.
By shipping, I do maybe mean just sending an email with some PDF files in it. Yeah. But I'm trying to make a prototype for that, and that's been semi-difficult.
Yeah.
So, but I'm kind of on a mission, as you know, with this next game, because I was kind of challenged to do it. So.
Yeah, right.
So more on that next week. Tune in next week for some more info on that. But we have some bonus episodes planned where we talk about these games that we're working on. So
definitely.
So definitely we'll keep you posted on that. And we will. You brought up conservative versus developer. I just want to make a note that we got a comment on the website from Robert.
Oh.
And Robert pointed out that naturalist might be a better term than conservator.
Oh, that's much better. Yeah.
It is better.
Yeah.
So
we were talking about ideas for that too, because conservator is a big name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Anyways,
I think that's all I got. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening tonight. We really appreciate it. Check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, which is I'm okay. At podcastBTG. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I am at poorly_designed. You can send an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us 5 stars on iTunes. And that is it. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Say something.
Hola. What, would you like me to actually talk normally?
Yes, please, so I can get your
say incredibly smart things about game designs, Jason, like you always do.